You're listening to the Ready Set Cloud podcast, a show about trending and difficult topics on serverless and in the cloud. Today, we're talking about the Internet of Things. I've brought Rohan Desai on the show to talk about how he helped build the SmartThings services to manage hundreds of different types of sensors that emit and receive data all around us. We talk about the event-driven nature of smart homes, how to manage device state, and walk through the steps of pressing a button on your phone to your lights turning on. Ready? Set? Let's go.
The internet is all around us, but you probably already know that. Now, what you might not know is that there are devices using that internet everywhere. Things that report temperatures, open or close status, where your dog's been the last 5 minutes. Everything you can imagine has a sensor and sends data to software that makes sense of it for us. Of course, I'm referring to, and greatly oversimplifying, the Internet of Things. I brought Rohan Desai on the show to talk a bit about it and his experience managing a wide array of devices from different sources. Rohan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Alan. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm super excited to be over here and talk about all things on serverless, voice, and IoT in general.
Yeah, very happy to have you here. This is a really exciting episode for me. I don't have a lot of experience in IoT, so I'm really curious to pick your brain for someone who's been in here for a long time in this space. So you're an engineer at DoorDash, and you have a long history with serverless and working with IoT devices as well. Could you walk us through how you got here?
I do work at DoorDash right now, but how I was introduced to IoT was when I joined SmartThings. SmartThings is a smart home automation company which specializes in building an IoT platform. I joined them in 2016, and that's how I got introduced to this whole new field of IoT, Internet of Things, where we talk about these devices that we have at home, which use a wide array of protocols to communicate with each other and communicate to their respective hubs. I initially worked on the voice integrations that we had on the platform. At the time, Amazon Alexa had just launched and Google Assistant was also launching at the same time. So we wanted to build a voice integration, which is in its true sense like an IoT integration, right? We want our users to take it one step higher where you just use voice to control your devices instead of opening one more screen, getting to a list of devices and then controlling them. So I worked on building those voice integrations onto the platform, working directly with Amazon and Google on their smart home APIs and integrating with them. We also built this cloud platform from scratch called SmartThings Schema, which allowed all our third-party smart home partners to integrate with us and allow our users in turn to onboard all their devices onto the SmartThings ecosystem. And then that's how you have one ecosystem where you can pull in all your devices and you can build like custom automations and routines on top of them. And then you can run them during different times of the day based on your use cases. So yeah, that's how I got introduced to IoT. And now I'm at DoorDash and I'm working on consumer-facing problems right now. So
I remember when I got my very first Alexa device, it was the original Amazon Echo. And I had set it up on my kitchen table and my wife and I were sitting at the kitchen table looking at it. And I said, Alexa, play music. And it did. And I thought that the world had changed right then and there. The fact that I didn't have to touch anything, I didn't have to click, it recognized what I said and actually turned that into a command was at the time magical. Honestly, it still is. I just take it for granted. But could you talk a little bit about like what did you do in that aspect? What part of going from an MP3 or a wave to building an instruction did you work on?
The way it works is when you give this command to Alexa, the speech to text conversion happens on the Amazon side. They have these libraries where they are detecting the speech and they convert it into an intent, which is sending a particular type of request body to your skill. And then you configure that particular skill on the Amazon developer console, which gives us all the information to invoke a particular Lambda in the backend or a HTTP webhook endpoint with the payload saying that, okay, the consumer said, turn on this switch. So you get that data payload and you can take required actions based on that.
Got it. Okay. So that's the ingest part. And I want to talk about the reaction part or the follow on. But before we do that, I feel like we really need to take one step back and we'll come right back. And I just want to have you describe the Internet of Things for me because I greatly oversimplified it in the intro and I really want to hear it from somebody who's been in it for a long time. What is it?
Sure. Internet of Things is it's a very, very broad definition, and I feel like it's still evolving. But for me, it's not just home IoT. It's about industrial IoT, which is a really, really big sector. And based on the information that devices have with the help of sensors, we want to take particular actions. We want to be proactive about certain things. To just give you a very, very simple example, if you have like a water leak sensor, and if you have it in your basement in these areas where there are chances of flooding, you want to be proactive, and that's where IoT comes into the picture. So we can leverage the power of these sensors, which is constantly collecting all this data and then send it to us at some point where we can process it and we can take proactive actions based on these things. Industrial IoT is all about that. You have thousands and billions of sensors in this oil and gas industries where you're constantly collecting data and you want to be proactive. Like, hey, this particular burner or this particular fan has reached a temperature limit, so you probably want to take action over here, and you're saving millions and millions of dollars in damages while using these IoT technologies, right? Similarly, for home IoT, it's as simple as the water leak sensor example. So for me, the definition of IoT is harnessing the power of all these devices with the help of sensors and making your life easier in terms of like automating a lot of the things in your home. Saving energy is one of the biggest things. You want to get a read of energy off on all the devices that you are using. You want to set up your automations and routines in such a way that you are being more efficient with your energy usage. So I think IoT is just empowering all of these things.
So I want to get to actual details because you have worked at two very, very interesting companies, both in a way you could think have a big IoT presence. One, SmartThings. All it is, at least as far as the consumer side, is IoT devices, connecting devices from a whole bunch of different vendors together in one spot so you can control a smart home regardless of what brand you have. But you also have DoorDash. And I don't use DoorDash very often, but in my head, I think of it like Uber, where I can see when somebody is delivering something to me where the car is. And I, in my head, conceptualize that as data streaming from an IoT device. So I'd like you to correct me where I'm wrong there, but also let's just talk about them. Let's talk about the IoT presence and how the two differ and how they're similar.
Sure. Let's start with DoorDash. Right now, on the app, when you are ordering food and a Dasher is picking up your food and delivering it at your doorstep, we do have live updates on the map where it shows the real-time location of the Dasher. In some sense, it is IoT where you are getting this constant information, real-time information about a particular device's location. But I don't think we use any of the IoT protocols out there. It's merely just sending real-time location for the Dasher. Versus in SmartThings, you have a lot of device manufacturers, and all of these manufacturers have their devices working on different protocols. One of these protocols is the Zigbee protocol. There was a Connectivity Standards Alliance organization where there are certain people elected from certain organizations who are defining the way they want to evolve this standard. So there are devices in the market which use the Zigbee protocol. There are devices in the market which use the Z-Wave protocol. And the way these protocols work are totally different from each other. Like you have Yale Z-Wave locks, you have light bulbs which use the Zigbee protocol. And the SmartThings hub is this one hub which had the capability to translate all of those protocols into one understandable protocol for all our consumers. And then came the third generation of devices where people started onboarding their devices using Wi-Fi, just completely using the Wi-Fi protocol to talk to their clouds directly. And we also had certain devices which were using Bluetooth. So that was the whole goal of SmartThings, which is like you build this one hub which aggregates all these devices using different protocols. And they're abstracted for you. All you have to do is you bring it, you pair it with the SmartThings hub, and you don't care about the underlying protocol. So that's how IoT is, like different devices using different protocols. So yeah, it's fundamentally different. And more devices now have started just building their devices based on the cloud technologies, which is like just Wi-Fi. So because Wi-Fi is so reachable and it's so reliable. And in addition, I would like to talk about Lutron. Some of the companies have their own local protocol and they just build their in-house protocol, which the devices use to talk to each other. And the best part about those protocols is that you don't have to rely on the cloud to turn on your devices. You don't need to have internet to turn on or turn off your devices. You have a bridge which works locally, which allows for local execution. So that is the end goal where everyone wants to get to. Like if tomorrow you lose power from the grid or if you lose your internet connection, then you don't have to rely on your internet to turn on their devices. You can just do it locally because the local bridge is available over there. So a lot of these IoT companies are moving towards local execution because that is the end goal.
So you saying that actually reminds me of a thing. The last time I added a device, I think it was an Echo device on my Amazon account, I was given a confirmation dialog that said, "Do you want this device to participate in Amazon Sidewalk?" Which it almost feels like, as far as the way that they describe it to me, it almost feels like this local network, like what Lutron does, but it's not. It's still using Wi-Fi, but it's using other people's Wi-Fi. Do I have that in my head right?
About Sidewalk, I am not sure. Maybe it is the mesh network that you are talking about, but like Lutron is completely different. It has its bridge, and then if you have five switches at your home, all of them are connecting to the bridge first, and the bridge is connecting to the Lutron cloud over Wi-Fi. But like say if you're using your mobile app to turn on the device, it does not necessarily need to go to the cloud every time. You don't want to incur that round trip time every time you're turning on or turning off a device, right? All you have to do is you hit the command off, it goes to the bridge locally, and the bridge can locally delegate the instruction to the switch and say, hey, turn on this switch or turn off this switch. Versus there are a lot of devices in the market where they might have a bridge, but like if you send the command to the bridge has to send it to the cloud, and the cloud processes it and then sends it back to the bridge locally, and then the bridge locally sends that command back to the device. So there's that additional round trip time, and then you add those many steps of failure as well.
I got it. Okay. That's why those bridges are so expensive, because there's a decent amount of compute and things actually going on these chips that we're plugging into the wall at our houses.
And a lot of people have automation set up, right? Like you're leaving in the morning, lock the doors, turn off the lights. You're coming back in the evening, open the garage door, turn the lights on, unlock the door. So all these kind of routine automations, a lot of consumers have them set up. These automations don't need the cloud. So ideally, what would happen is if you have a hub locally, you could run these automations locally on the hub, and then the hub should be capable of sending those instructions locally to the device, and then you just execute your automation.
I love that. And that is immediately ringing serverless bells in my head. Now, obviously, you said local and serverless isn't, but the thing that's ringing the serverless bell in my head is the fact that I'm not paying for uptime. It's really an event-driven, on-demand, only what I use kind of deal. So let's talk a little bit about serverless and IoT and how the two are used. Because I feel like, due to the event-driven nature of IoT devices pushing things out, like let's use your example that you were just talking about, where you have routines that happen in the morning, where you get up, your alarm goes off. I've seen some fun routines where it like turns on a smart outlet that has a towel heater plugged into it. And then you go downstairs, the lights are already on for you, and then it closes your garage door when you leave. That's all very event driven. So let's talk a little bit about how that lends itself so well to serverless. So what have you seen in this space?
Yeah, for sure. So from my experiences, I think serverless is the perfect fit for the IoT use cases, especially the smart home IoT use cases, right? Because like we talked about, most of the events or the traffic patterns in the smart home IoT industry are such that you see spikes in the morning when people are leaving their homes and they have these automations which are set to trigger at that time. And then you see a spike in the evening when folks are coming back home and they want these set of automations to kick off again. So it's a spiky pattern. So you'll see a spike in the morning and then you'll see a spike in the evening. So I feel like serverless is the perfect use case for this because you don't want to have an EC2 instance running all the time just to handle these two spikes, right? Serverless is built in such a way that it can auto scale. You use Lambdas or you use DynamoDB in the backend, and then you get a spike in the morning, you get a spike in the evening, so they can auto scale, and that's the beauty of serverless, right? And they can handle the traffic load at that point. And then during the day, you don't have a lot of events going on. It's just like very, very low traffic big because usually people are not at home, or for people who are at home, you don't see a lot of events happening. So serverless is perfect because this is completely on demand. And then coming to the second part, which is like, it's more event driven because when a device changes its state, you want to register that state and then you want to propagate that event downstream for your other services to pick it up. So all of this is going to happen on demand. We don't know when that device is going to turn on or turn off and like when are we going to get that event. So I feel like serverless is the perfect use case because this is completely going to happen on demand. You process that event and then you fire an event, publish it to a queue, and then whoever is interested can subscribe to that event and take particular actions based on that. One more example that I can think about in this case is that when we were working with Amazon on the Smart Home API for voice, they also wanted data back from us to keep their ecosystem up to date with device states. So that's like a callback or an event that we are sending back to their ecosystem. So say when someone changes the state of a device using the SmartThings app, turns on a device from on to off, the Amazon app also has this capability right now. I'm not sure if you use it right now with smart home devices, but like you can set up automations and routines on the Amazon app as well. So they also rely on these events. So we consume that event and then we send that event to Amazon and then Amazon consumes that event and says, hey, okay, I know that the device has turned on and I have this automation over here and I need to take this particular action next. So serverless fits completely in this entire scenario where you want to make it event-driven, yeah.
It definitely does. And it sounds like there's way more pieces to really all of this than I had originally thought. So I want to get specific for a second and have you walk me through the architecture of two different scenarios. One, when I manually turn on a light switch. So I have a switch in my home that is smart and I turn it on by actually physically pressing the button. What happens? What's the communication mechanism from that device to these serverless architectures that are running out there in the sky to update my accounts, let's say in SmartThings or even the Alexa app that gives my device status? What's the process?
For sure. And a lot of things, it really depends on the device. So let's assume that it is a smart Wi-Fi device. So it is built by this partner A, and they have their own cloud. So now you go and physically turn on that device that communicates directly to their cloud saying that, okay, this device was turned on physically. And then as soon as that partner A knows about that, they have their own IoT architecture, right? It's completely event-based. As soon as they detect that event, they send a callback event back to, say, SmartThings in this case, because you worked as the aggregator partner. And then SmartThings would process that event on our side and then be like, okay, if that device belongs to Alan and Alan has this Amazon Alexa skill for SmartThings enabled, then I need to let Amazon know that, okay, this particular device changed its state as well. So in our backend architecture, we have to process that event. We have to update our device state table as well. And then we let Amazon know that, hey, this device was physically turned on. So that's usually the path or the flow of the events, right? For a cloud device. Now say if it's a Zigbee device or a Z-Wave device or a Lutron device, these devices behave differently. They might have to talk to the hub first because they don't have a cloud connection. They don't have the capability to talk directly to a Wi-Fi endpoint. They don't have the Wi-Fi chip. So they have to talk to the hub locally. The hub locally has a bridge which is connected to their remote cloud. And then they have to update the state in their cloud, which then, in this case, it's SmartThings, if it's the SmartThings hub. So we directly get that event. And then we know, okay, this is Alan's device. Alan has this Alexa skill and this Google action enabled. So I have to let these two partners know that this device has updated their state. And then you accordingly, they can execute the routines on their side.
So simple.
It sounds really simple, but like turning on and turning off a device, there are a lot of things happening in the background, but it's a very simple flow at like when it's surfaced to the user, right?
Oh yeah, no, total sarcasm there. There's a lot going on. So let's flip it. Let's say instead of pressing a light switch that's Wi-Fi enabled, what if I did it through specifically the Alexa app? And I said, I want to turn this on. I press the button on my phone and it turns on. What's the communication from my phone to that device that's in my wall?
There are two ways of interacting with Alexa. One is through the app, which is very similar to the other third-party app to whom the device belongs. And the other interface that Alexa has is voice. So both of them behave in the same way. When you turn on the device from the app, You click on the on button, it sends a device payload. It sends a payload back to the integration with us because Alexa is getting all those devices from SmartThings. So it sends that payload via voice or the app to us saying that, okay, the consumer wants to turn on this device. And then when we get that payload, what we do is we figure out that, okay, this is a third-party device who has its own cloud. So we have to send that command to execute that command on that device. So we have to send it to the third-party cloud. So it's a REST call in the background with the device payload, with the device ID, the instruction, is it on, off, is it dimming at a particular level, 60%, 70%, right? All those things. So we have to do that translation over there. That is one more very important aspect of it. Every device manufacturer is different. They have a different protocol. So you want to translate it to the right commands and the right RGB spectrum if you're talking about RGB bulbs. And then you have to send that payload to that particular, make a REST call to that partner to process that command on that device. And once they have successfully executed that command on that device, they send the response back to us saying that, hey, okay, we accepted this command and it is turned on. And then we send that response all the way back to Alexa. And then Alexa is like, hey, okay, we successfully turned on the device.
Is that synchronous or is that asynchronous?
This is pretty much synchronous and asynchronous for certain flows. So in the way it's asynchronous is it's, you just say turn on the device and then it's like fire and forget and then we send an event back to them, right? So it's fire and forget and then we wait for events coming back from the partner and then we trigger events and we send it back to Amazon. So that's how they don't wait for us because they want to tell the consumer that we have processed your command, we will let you know. So it's async in a part of the architecture.
There's really so much to it. You're making my mind just go crazy with architecture diagrams and how all these things work. I just love the event-driven nature of it. Just hop, asynchronous hop to synchronous execution to come back and publish something else asynchronously back to maintain state. And let's talk about state for a minute because it's actually very, very important when we're talking about IoT devices is what state is it in? Using the light switch as an example. Mm-hmm. Because everybody knows how light switches work. You had already mentioned there's a lot more state than on off. There's also like dim level. There's a whole bunch of stuff. So because you have these applications like Alexa and SmartThings that are synchronizing state and reacting to state changes, how do they maintain that state? Everything fails all the time, as we all know. That's something that we have to understand in distributed computing, especially in event-driven architectures. What happens when something fails? Is there a synchronization effort that's going on behind the scenes at regular intervals to make sure that the state is actually reflecting what's happening in these devices?
Yes. At least for the cloud devices, what we used to do or what is recommended is that periodically there would be a check that would happen with the partner to make sure that we are getting the right state of the device and we are reflecting the right state of the device for the consumer. Because like you said, there are multiple hops involved over here and multiple points of failure. So it's possible that someone sending a command to turn on a device, but something failed somewhere and you don't know, it's like something might have failed. Everything in your architecture or in all the moving pieces of your architecture succeeded, but at the end device, something went wrong. The device itself was not able to turn on. You can't solve for that particular problem unless the partner has a polling mechanism to figure out what is going on. Did the light turn on? Did the light turn off? So what we do is ideally we have some sort of periodic polling to various partners that we have, and then we say, hey, can you give us the updated state of this devices? What do you have right now? And then based on that, we do update the state of the devices so that the consumer knows accurately what is going on with the device. It's important to let them know. Otherwise, it's not a good experience for the consumer. Like you say, I ask Alexa to turn on the light. It does not turn on the light. And then it's been like that for 6 hours. So there is definitely a periodic poll that happens synchronously in the background where we try to update the state of the device and reflect the right state of the device.
I love hearing stuff like this because it really brings to light that there is no magic. We're all using the same architectural patterns no matter what the domain is. Pull, push, recover. It's all the same. It just has the nuance of the business problem. So really appreciate the transparency on how all these things work. But with that, we are running a little bit low on time. This conversation has really gotten away from me because it's just so interesting. So how would people best get a hold of you if they have questions on IoT related things or serverless or anything really?
People can find me at LinkedIn. search me by my name, Rohan Desai and Smart Things. You should be able to find me, and I'm more than happy to answer your questions on serverless, IoT, and voice, because that's what I did for the most part at Smart Things, and I still enjoy talking about those things. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. I'm definitely going to have a follow-up with you in the next season of the Ready, Set, Cloud podcast, because I think we could have talked all day about this. So thank you again, and we will talk to you later.
Thank you so much, Alan. It was great talking about these things. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Ready, Set, Cloud podcast. Be sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts to stay up to date on the latest episodes. For more info on trending cloud topics, be sure to visit ReadySetCloud.io and sign up for the Serverless Picks of the Week newsletter. I'm Alan Helton, and we're out of here. If you do, wanna hear you go.